This is the Fighting the Good Fight podcast, defending taxpayers and solving their tax problems with your host, Patricia Gentile. Patricia Gentile is a taxpayer defense attorney, CPA, the founder of New England Tax Relief, and Patricia L. Gentile Coaching. With 40 years of IRS expertise and experience, she has successfully defended and resolved difficult IRS situations for hundreds of taxpayers. Patricia coaches tax professionals to confidently identify their client's IRS problem and create a successful resolution plan for them. As a fierce advocate, a creative strategist, and solution finder, fighting the good fight with Patricia Gentile is both her passion and purpose to help tax professionals successfully resolve their clients' tax problems.
Welcome. I'm your host, Patricia Gentile. And today, my guest is James Olson. And do you mind if I call you Jim?
Yes, please call me Jim.
Thank you. Jim is a CPA and a CFE and a CFF, and I will have him explain those credentials. But he has over 35 years of professional experience, of which 25 years of that is with the IRS. And his positions in the IRS started out back in the late 80s to the early 90s in their examination division in Reno and Las Vegas. And we know those areas to be gambling capitals of the United States for sure. After the in the early 90s through then the early 2000s, you were a special agent in the criminal investigation division in Las Vegas, as well as becoming a supervisory special agent in the criminal investigation division in Denver, Colorado. Is a supervisory special agent, were you training as well others, special agents?
No, a supervisor, they run a group. You know, we would generally have somewhere between 8 and 12 agents, and then we would manage, you know, and assist the agents in their investigations.
This led you into becoming a senior analyst in the criminal investigation division in Washington, D.C., and a special agent in the criminal investigation division in Colorado, staying in Denver, Colorado. For the past 10 years, you have been the founder and president of Financial Forensics, LLC. And go ahead and explain why you left the Internal Revenue Service after 25 years and spent the past 10 years with your own company, Financial Forensics, LLC, and what you wanted to offer through that company.
Well, I mean, just briefly, you know, there's mandatory retirement at age 57 for a special agent when you have a badge and a gun.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You can't work beyond that other than very extreme circumstances. And we won't go into that because it's very, very rare. And I had some life tragedies and I had a 3-year-old daughter, and it was just time for me to retire and come back to Colorado and, you know, raise my daughter. And after about 6 months of doing nothing, being retired, I don't like doing nothing. You know, I had all my licenses and I'm like, you know what, I should open a little CPA firm and just go out there and try and help people that are sideways with the IRS. And it started slow, started small. And, you know, like these types of businesses, it mushroomed into a monster.
What did you bring into this company that you could offer your clients that came from your 25 years in criminal investigation? Well, with the IRS, and I know about the first 4 years was as a revenue agent and examination, but pretty much your specialty was criminal investigation special agent with the IRS in those 25 years.
Right. I mean, I obviously, we did tax returns and a little bit of IRS resolution stuff, some of the simpler stuff. That stuff gets very, very complex. And sometimes you actually need to be an attorney, either that or be admitted to tax court, which is a whole nother discussion, which we won't go into. But I bring a different set of eyes when I look at stuff. I really do. I look at things a little differently. I look at from how would the IRS look at this? If I still had that hat on and I was looking at these returns, how would I look at this? When I have clients come to me, sometimes I'll help out in messy divorce cases where the tax returns are pretty ugly. Let's just say it that way. And the attorney will want me to just do a scrub of the returns and what's the risk there before we have a final settlement between him and her. You don't want somebody walking out the door and disappearing if the IRS comes in a year later and does audits and there's all of a sudden a $3 million tax assessment.
Wow.
So that type of stuff. I bring a different set of eyes than just your average CPA.
Well, and at this point, just recently, just last month, you became the in-house CPA for the law office of Chrissy Lee, who's she has three locations, Alaska, Hawaii, and Texas. I've known Chrissy Lee for oh, at least a decade now, as a member of the Tax Defense Institute. And that's how I met you when you came on board. How long you been a member now? Four years, 5 years?
I want to say 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. But you're now in-house CPA for her. But you also bring in to this not just your experience in criminal investigation, but also, as your credentials state, the CFE, the Certified Fraud Examiner, the CFF credential of Certified Financial Forensic. You bring in quite a bit of specialized experience as a CPA, very specialized experience. And that's why I thought it was really important for our listeners to understand the difference between an IRS special agent versus a revenue agent, an IRS revenue agent versus a revenue officer, because most of us, I believe one of the times you and I were talking, there's only what, 2,000 to 2,500 IRS special agents.
Yes, that fluctuates, but somewhere in that area. I'm sure it's
Right.
on their website somewhere, but I would assume they have somewhere between that number right now. I know they're
So,
trying to hire more.
oh yes, and they have the budget that they can do that if they want to. The billions of dollars that they've been appropriated to them, but it makes you with that small number of IRS imp agents, you're an elite group. There is no doubt. And you're probably, I was going to say a group that's off the radar for most of us CPAs and EAs and tax attorneys who are doing tax resolution and representation work on the civil level for the most part.
Right.
What you dealt with is the criminal investigation level, but go ahead and explain the difference between a special agent, a revenue agent, or a revenue officer, and how a criminal investigation can be opened.
Sure. First, revenue agents and revenue officers, that's the civil side of the IRS. That's the vast majority of the IRS. Obviously, there's different job titles for lots of people. But the IRS, mostly their job is to administer the tax system, collect taxes, administer penalties, deal with that type of stuff. Revenue agents do the audits. You also have office auditors, which is a lower level, usually less educated, less experienced. They won't go into the multitude of issues a revenue agent goes into. Usually a revenue agent gets assigned a tax return and they're supposed to determine what the correct tax should be. Within reason. Revenue officers, they go out and collect and also secure delinquent tax returns. Once again, nothing criminal about that. The revenue agent shows up at your door, or they're not going to show up at your door probably, but they'd send you a letter first because there's been so much identity theft in that arena with the IRS and people claiming to be IRS agents. They'll send you a letter for first contact, tell you we've selected such and such returns for audit. Here's your information document request. Here's what we're looking at. Revenue officers, same type thing. You'll get notices saying that we haven't received your tax returns or you owe X amount of dollars. How would you like to pay? And you're working through
Right.
me now. Special agents are a whole different animal. Let's talk about that just briefly. When they show up at your door, and if you're the subject of the investigation, they're probably going to read you your non-custodial rights. You're not under arrest, but what they're doing is they're telling you that you are under criminal investigation. You don't have to talk to me. You can get an attorney if you so desire. The goal of revenue agents and revenue officers is to get returns filed, collect money. That's pretty much it, assess tax. The goal of a special agent is to collect the criminal evidence so they can refer it to the federal prosecutors. Recommend a criminal tax case, whether it's evasion, whether it's false returns. And the ultimate goal of that is federal incarceration. Let's be clear on that. Their goal is to put you in prison. Their goal is not to collect money. A lot of people get that mixed up. Okay, oh, can I just pay a bunch of money and they'll go away? Probably not. I won't say never, but probably not. And then when the criminal investigation's done, then the civil side's going to come back in and determine that you owe a whole lot of money. And then you're still going to get notices that say you owe millions of dollars. How would you like to pay?
Do you show up? Do special agents show up at a taxpayer's door or business alone? Or
No,
do you
always in
go in
pairs.
pairs?
Yeah, I would never allow any, I would never, and I would never allow any of my agents to do that by themselves. Number one, you want to have a witness. Number two, we are law enforcement. Sometimes, not very often, but we do carry guns. We have handcuffs. We have, badges. We have, there's been times when people have showed up on doors and somebody wants to fight. And you don't
Right.
want to walk into that on your own. Number one, you want to have a witness, right? So you can get at minimum two people to give a side of the story, as opposed to the person that wanted to fight. And then you want two people to effect an arrest at a minimum if that happens. That's rare, but I won't say it's never happened.
I can remember revenue agents, as we all know, as auditors, revenue agents, and I think even revenue officers, showing up at, this is a while ago, at the taxpayer's home or business, but especially at the home where I was hearing this, and I actually represented some clients after the fact, where they invited the revenue officer, in the home or the revenue agent. And my understanding is that the training of the revenue officer or revenue agent was to kind of eyeball all the assets all
Sure.
around somebody's house, as well as what you were saying in your position as a special agent. You're listening for, could you say that again? What is it that you're listening for?
Well, I'm attempting to get, admissions.
Admissions, that's it.
Admissions that we can use, to help convict them. I'm also, if I can walk into their house or their business, if they don't invite us in, we don't, unless we have a warrant, and we can talk about that later. But on the initial contact, we're not going to have a search warrant or anything like that. You can look around and sometimes you can see things that might lead to a search warrant. You can
Right.
establish that, oh, there's computers here, there's business records, there's that type of stuff.
Right.
And now I can put that in an affidavit. I can be an affiant and say, the individual invited me to their home when we first contacted them. And we believe there's fruits of the crime on those computers. Maybe we have some other information to help support that. Now I've identified specificity on, where that piece of evidence may be. I've seen the computer. I saw it 2 days ago on their table. High likelihood it's probably still there. So if the case determines that that's necessary, we may go after a search warrant. And then we come out with, 20 agents. and secure the site and gather whatever evidence we want to gather. But that's a huge distinction on a special agent versus a revenue agent versus a revenue officer. And
Right.
that's important people understand that, because I know in our, in the world of the civil world and tax resolution and preparing tax returns, many people have little or maybe no contact ever with a special agent. They have no idea what's going on when those people show up.
So, how does a criminal investigation get open?
There's many ways. Obviously, the revenue officers and the revenue agents can refer those cases to criminal investigation. If they go out and they're doing their audit, and they start to determine that there's indications of fraud, the tax return says the gross receipts for the business was $1 million, and they pull bank statements, look at bank statements, and there's $2 million being deposited into those accounts. Now, that's a first indication of fraud. That alone doesn't prove fraud. It just proves, something's going on here. There's some smoke. Is there some fire? If they determine later, they go out and they'll ask the taxpayer, can you explain why you have $2 million in deposits and only $1 million in gross receipts for the last 6 years for your business? And if they have no reasonable explanation, at that point, they may refer it to criminal investigation. It'll come across the desk of somebody like me when I was a supervisor to look at and assess it. And then if I determine it has reasonable potential, to assign it to an agent to look at. There's also many other ways. We have hotlines where people can call in. Very common for, when marriages break up, spouses, ex or soon to be ex-spouses or ex-spouses will turn people in. Relatives, brother-in-laws, business partners, all kinds of sources. We get information from other law enforcement agencies. We work hand in hand in criminal investigation with the FBI, the DEA, and the whole plethora of federal law enforcement agencies, as well as the locals. That's our job, is to make those connections and have those liaisons. So when they see something that looks funny, they give us a call. Say, hey, you might want to take a look at this individual. This person's, 28 years old. They're driving a Ferrari. They live in a $12 million house. They're spending money like crazy. And something's going on there. That alone, doesn't necessarily mean they are. Maybe they, maybe they have trust funds or something. Who knows? Maybe they got a huge insurance settlement. You never know. But maybe it's worth just taking a peek at. Does this, and then we'll talk to the tax fraud or the revenue agent or tax fraud TCO, and determine what do we really have here. When we talk about some more technical issues, that can be very hard to prove in federal court. Let's talk about that just briefly. What do we have to prove to prove tax fraud? There's the intent factor. That's the biggest piece. Intent is everything. Okay. You basically have to prove that when you had that return prepared, or when you gave that information to your return preparer, you knew you were either withholding critical information or giving them false information. And you knew when you signed that return that you were sending in a false document, and in order to get an advantage over the government by paying less tax. Okay, very important. That's what we have to prove when you see those elements of the crime for either tax evasion or filing a false return. There's always intent. Lots of people make mistakes. I always like to use the example, a high dollar amount is not a criminal fraud case. When I was auditing the big casinos, we always had the same issues, generally. But there's always an issue of, oh gosh, I don't remember what it was called, but it doesn't matter. But it was many, many millions of dollars. And the IRS would come in every year and audit the return and disallow it. Well, why isn't that fraud? You've been told by the IRS you can't do this. And yet you do it over and over and over, and you take these huge deductions. Well, it's because it's an un what's the word I'm looking for? It's an unresolved issue. There's been no tax court case. There's been no district court case, that has said, absolutely you cannot do this. Their position is not unreasonable. When you look at the facts and circumstances, they say, no, we're allowed a deduction on this. The IRS, you say, no, we believe you're wrong. We're going to go through appeals. We're going to go to tax court. We're going to go to district court if we need to. It's not a criminal case, even though it's millions of dollars every year in tax that's not paid. And then they resolve it up the line through appeals and that type of stuff. So just having a large dollar amount does not make a criminal case. It's all about intent. What was your intent? How do we prove intent? Couple of ways. What you say and what you do and what you tell other people, and that's what you say. Okay? I'll give a real good example here. And they probably still do it. You have heavy cash businesses that are for sale. Okay? And pick a business, I don't even know anymore. But you have bars, nightclubs, laundromats deal, a lot in cash. They
Tow
want to.
companies.
What's that?
Tow companies. You can't get your car out of a corral without paying them cash. I
There you
know that.
go.
I'm close to Boston, so that's how that works.
There you go. So what happens? So these people advertise, we want to sell this business, pick a number for $1 million. Well, if you're doing your due diligence, you don't just walk in and give them a check for $1 million and say, okay, I own your business now. I want your tax returns. I want to see your books. I may even want to see your bank records, right?
Right.
If you have tax returns to show you're netting $30,000 a year from your tow business over the last 6 years, why would anybody pay $1 million for something like that, right?
Right.
So what do these people say? Oh, that's just what I tell the IRS.
Oops.
I really make 10 times that. So the IRS special agents, we will set up a an operation. We will send in another undercover agent who's very trained at this, and they'll be wired up. They'll have little cameras in their lapel or whatever, and microphones, and you'll never know it because they're so tiny nowadays. And we want you to tell us, oh, that's just what I tell the IRS. That's not what I really make. What did we just put on tape? Your intent to cheat on your taxes. I tell the IRS I make 30,000. I really make 300. That's why I want $1 million for this business, and I want to get out of this. I want to move on.
Who
So
did the
now we have an instance where you have now told us you're cheating on your taxes. We will play that for the jury. It's very clear. Those cases, I won't say never, but rarely go to trial because the intent is so strong. And as long as we can corroborate that, what they say is true, you really are making $3 million a year. Your lifestyle supports it, or we can trace it through bank records or whatever. The other way is through your actions, and that's more common. What are you doing? Did you set up a scheme? Do you have hidden bank accounts in nominee names that you're depositing money to? When the revenue agent came out and was asking you questions, did you lie to them? Do you how many bank accounts do you have? I just have one. You just have one. Yes, one. Then we find three other bank accounts with hundreds of thousands of dollars going into them in a name other than the individual. Well, why did you do that? Maybe they're structuring money. Why would you go to 10 different banks to deposit $3,000 if you're legit? If you have $30,000 of revenue, you go to your bank, you deposit $30,000. If there's a CTR, that's okay. It's legitimate. I don't care. But if you're going to 10 different banks, spending half a day to deposit $3,000, that's pretty good intent, that you're trying to hide stuff. Those types of things. Because we're going to run out of time here. I want to make sure we get into talking about, the accountants and the CPAs and stuff out
Yes.
there.
Yeah, that was the
And
next area. Right. Absolutely. Go right ahead, Jim.
I think it's really important because a lot of people don't deal with people walking in their door and basically telling them, I'm cheating on my taxes. Can you help me? Right? And if you're
Yes.
not an attorney, this is the If you take nothing away from this discussion, you need to understand this. If you're a CPA, you're an enrolled agent, you're just Joe the bookkeeper, somebody walks in and starts telling you about how they're cheating on their taxes, you have no privilege. Privilege is what an attorney has where, you're not allowed to discuss, nor can you can be legal, nor can you be legally forced to, discuss what your client told you. That's a privilege,
And
right?
potential client as well.
That's
Not just
right.
client,
That's
but
right.
potential client. Yeah.
CPAs have to understand that. Enrolled agents, you have no privilege. You have to understand when somebody walks in the door and starts telling you about the criminal stuff they're doing, you need to cut it off right there. Unless you want to be a witness in the case. Right?
All right.
Because Everything you tell me, now I work for Christie Lee now, so I work under the auspices of a law firm. So if somebody tells me something, if they're a client or potential client, it's privilege because I work under Christie. But
Right.
when I was working financial forensics, my CPA firm, and I've had a couple of people come in and start to tell me about how, well, I've got some records, but I didn't really report everything I made, and I'll cut them off right there. I don't want you telling me this.
Right.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but we're done. We need to get you a competent attorney, get under privilege. And then if that attorney wants to hire me to assist, they can.
Right.
Generally, we do it through a COVAL letter. And without going into details, that was a court case that laid out that if an expert is hired by the attorney, you now work for the attorney, you're under their privilege. And now the client can tell you everything. And you can never be compelled by the legal process to divulge what they said. Otherwise, if you're just a run-of-the-mill CPA, they're going to, if they find you, they're going to compel you to testify in front of the grand jury, or somewhere, or tell the agents. And once again, you have made all these admissions to a third party. There's no privilege. Well, they're going to share those admissions, and you're going to be probably the third witness on the stand at trial if that so happens. Very, very crucial for people to understand when to cut that conversation off. I know people that would say, well, I need to know all the facts before I can. Well, okay, great. You've just made yourself a witness. And a good, competent special agent will turn over every rock to try and find these accountants or CPAs that this individual talked to. And I'll give you an example. A case I wasn't my case, but a case I saw. Where an individual wasn't filing their employment taxes. They'd been to several different CPAs, and we're talking significant amounts of money for the business he was running. CPA had actually written them letters, three different CPAs that said, you could be criminally prosecuted and go to jail for not filing your 941s and paying your withholding tax. Of course, we gathered all that up, and what great evidence, right? You were advised by your CPA, you cannot do this. You'll go to jail if you do this. That's the kind of stuff special agents love to get, those types of things. Now, once again, how are we showing your criminal intent? Through your actions. You were advised you can't do this by two or three competent CPAs, and yet you continued to do it.
But at the same token here in this situation, the CPAs listened to this tax evader, if you want to call it, listened to this person and then responded back, correct? So
Yeah.
you as a special agent would also be talking to them and probably having them on the witness stand in order to even authenticate and direct examine them. As to what it was that this taxpayer said to them that caused them to write this email and, authenticate, did, were you the person who wrote this email?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get their full story,
Right.
But the document is even better because they sent this. These are letters they sent,
Right.
basically termination letters. I can't take you on as a client. If you're going
Right.
to do things like this, I don't want you as a client, and
Right.
goodbye.
Right.
Beautiful, beautiful evidence. One
Right.
other thing that I want to throw out there, because I know we're starting to run out of time, is
Right.
people need to understand the kind of attorney they want to hire. Doesn't mean that, if you went through law school and you passed the bar, I assume number one, you're a pretty intelligent person. We've all seen dummy attorneys, but usually you're a pretty intelligent person. But if you're not a specialist in tax and in criminal tax especially, you have no business doing this stuff. My opinion over the years, I can't tell you how many people I've had come in. Oh, I have my attorney. He's my real estate attorney. He's my general business attorney. And I'm like, great, you understand your rights? Yes, I do. Okay. And I will drag so many admissions out of them because unless you know this game, criminal tax is so nuanced and there's so many little areas. And if you don't know it, God help you. That's all I can say. If you hire somebody that, isn't very, very versed in criminal matters. And criminal matters are different than IRS resolution matters. They really are. Now, let's talk briefly also, because I want to throw it out here. What's the purpose of a criminal investigation?
No,
It costs
absolutely. Yeah.
the government millions of dollars, right? Agent's
Right.
time, prosecutor's time, court time, not to mention if the person is incarcerated. You know, all of that costs money, millions and millions of dollars. Why
Right.
do we do this? Why do we do that? And I say we, because I used to be we. We want headlines, right?
Really?
Yes, we want the average person out there to see that, oh, such and such went to prison for cheating on their taxes. Oh, I better clean up my act. That's what we want. We want press. That's the
Wow.
whole purpose for it. That's why you'll see all these press releases. Department of Justice indicts somebody for tax evasion. Now, I think that's grossly unfair because you can indict just about anybody if you've ever been a prosecutor. That's not that hard. You know, that and they will say at the last little sentence, an indictment is not proof of guilt. You know, they have to be, found guilty in a court of law. Well, still, it's all over the newspapers, maybe in the news, depending on who you are. You know, talk briefly about, the Hunter Biden thing. I'm not getting into politics, but
Right.
well, why are they going after this guy? Well, because every news story out there, right, is talking
Right.
about his tax evasion trial. And if he's convicted, it's going to be nothing but news headlines for the next, several days. And that's what they want. They want people to know that if you're an honest taxpayer, you have the right to know that people that cheat on their taxes are held accountable and there's consequences to their actions. That's the whole reason for criminal prosecutions.
So,
So let's talk about the process here real quick, just so we can get into that.
sure.
So basically, case comes across CI's desk. They decide they want to work a case. Okay? There's two types. There's a primary investigation where that's just kind of quietly looking at it. Where if somebody had brought information in, you can re-interview them, you can look at public records, you can determine, okay, they live in a $6 million house, they own these fancy cars, they've got these six businesses, we pull tax returns, and you look at the tax returns, and it's like there's no way these tax returns support this lifestyle. Now you write up a little report, you recommend to your supervisor, we elevate this to a subject criminal investigation. If that's now approved by the supervisor and then by the higher levels in the office, the special agent in charge of the office, they have to approve it. Now we have a full-blown investigation. Now we have to decide how do we want to do this? Do you want to work this to the grand jury? Is it possible we're going to have witnesses that we roll and we plea out and that type of stuff? Or can this just be done administratively, just within the IRS?
Okay.
And that would be without, there's no grand jury, there's no sworn testimony, none of that kind of stuff.
Right.
If you work a grand jury case, you're working it through the U.S. Attorney's office, and you generally have an, well, you will have an attorney assigned, a federal prosecutor, and you kind of make decisions together on how to move forward.
All right.
So then they'll come out, they'll try and do the initial contact with you. And once again, if you're dumb enough to answer their questions, you'll probably make a bunch of admissions. That's why you should always say politely, you know what? Let me get an attorney and we'll talk briefly here. I'll have the attorney contact you. Once again, that competent attorney that understands the
Right.
tax world. So
Right.
then the case will progress. They'll gather all the information they need to gather, put it together, then the case through. Once they're done with the case and they want to recommend prosecution charges, that's the last thing you would put in your report, special agent report. Either you recommend criminal prosecution. If you're not going to recommend, you should have killed the case a long time before.
Yeah.
Then it
Yeah.
goes through several levels of review with the IRS. They have experienced agents that are reviewers that will review the case for legal sufficiency. Is there intent? Does it look good? Does it, is there any factors here? The guy's child was dying of leukemia during this 3-year period they didn't file their tax returns. You take that into consideration, right? Very poor
Right.
jury appeal on that. We're also
Right.
humans too. Sometimes there's things more important in the world than taxes,
Right.
right? But it's got to be something pretty serious. Then after that, it goes to what we have is called CT counsel, criminal tax counsel. That's attorneys out of main counsel office that are assigned to every field office that do nothing but criminal tax issues. They will review the report. And they're
Wow.
looking for, does this meet the standards of, once again, legal sufficiency? Can we successfully prosecute this case? So it's reviewed a second time. Then it's referred to Department of Justice. It's now referred or reviewed by a Department of Justice attorney or attorneys. Once again, these are attorneys that have probably many, many criminal tax trials under their belt. These are the what I call highly competent criminal tax attorneys. That's all they do. And they'll review the case, and do we have a reasonable chance of winning this at trial? And if so, they will then they can approve the charges that are sent out to the local U.S. Attorney's office.
What is it that you'd like to make a point of for the tax practitioner, the CPA, and the EA? And the tax attorney that's listening, where, this is a different area, a different insight. It's an insight to a different area of the IRS, the Criminal Investigation Division and special agents. What would be your message for us to take away from this experience of yours?
Main thing is be aware if you're a practitioner, when a client comes in, starts telling you about all the misdeeds they're doing, there's a line there, and until you hear the facts, I can't tell you exactly where the line is, but if they start making it real obvious that they're cheating on their taxes, stop the interview. Stop it and tell them you need to get counsel. Second point, you need to get competent counsel that understands criminal tax. Not your brother-in-law who's a business attorney. Your brother-in-law may be a genius, maybe he went to Yale, but if he doesn't work in this world, he doesn't know this world, he or she. Very important. Same thing on practitioners. If somebody wants you to do shady stuff, you could very easily become a co-conspirator. And I
Rampart.
don't think, there are very few people, especially if you're credentialed, are going to do shady stuff. But I've certainly seen it happen. I've seen CPAs and attorneys that have been sentenced to prison for various schemes. It does happen.
Right. Jim, I can't thank you enough. You're very still passionate. I mean, you spent 2.5 decades in this area. I'm going to ask you, do you miss it? And what about it do you miss, and what about do that you don't?
Sometimes, but I tell you what, I really enjoy what I do now because I'm still in the game, so to speak, but from a different perspective. The goal is always to shut these criminal investigations down as soon as possible. Number one, they're very expensive to defend. You're going to get a good attorney because there aren't that many out there that really know this game and they charge a premium. So, if the IRS shows up at your door and they want to put you in jail for tax evasion, it's expensive. And there's a lot of stress and there's, a lot of fear because most people, they're not bad people. They're not drug dealers. They're not pimps. They're not, they're just business people that have gotten sideways with their taxes. Maybe they go to church. They're good neighbors. They're not bad people other than they did some things on their tax returns that maybe they shouldn't have done.
I just want to say thank you for being on our side now, so that you actually can serve and help the taxpayer not have to go through that stress and that horror and that can this can lead to, because you have that insight of knowing the difference and knowing the line of criminal versus civil and a mistake and how to clean that up. And boy, anybody going through this process, they can reach you at the law office of Chrissy Lee.
You just look us up on the website, Law Offices of Christie Lee, and we're here to help. We specialize especially in this criminal arena, and we can be very useful to people. And because we'll tell you the truth. Thank you so much, Patty. I really enjoyed talking with you. And anytime, we could do this for hours, but unfortunately, neither of us have hours to talk about this stuff.
And thank you. Thank you for condensing it in the time that you have. It's invaluable. Thanks so much, Jim. We hope you are enjoying this episode of the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. Make sure you don't miss a moment by simply subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are also excited to announce that the Fighting the Good Fight podcast is now available on YouTube. Just search Fighting the Good Fight podcast with Patricia Gentile, and while you're there, give us a like. The Fighting the Good Fight podcast is a Park City Productions presentation. Learn more at Park City Productions 06604 on Facebook or Instagram. I'm Patricia Gentile, and we'll see you next time.